Welcome to the Rediscover Hour on Relevant Radio, a time to explore our Catholic faith and find out about ways to share the faith with others. Help create the possibility of an encounter with the person of Jesus Christ in the lives of others by living out the call to the new evangelization and helping fellow Catholics rediscover full life in the Church. The Rediscover Hour starts now.
Welcome to the Rediscover Hour. Good to have you with us today. I'm Jeff Cavins, and we are talking today, as we do every Rediscover Hour, about evangelization, bringing Christ to other people, and experiencing Jesus Christ to the fullest in our own lives. Great show for you today. We're going to be talking with Sherry Waddell. Maybe you've heard about her book, and her book is about forming intentional disciples. We're going to find out what an intentional disciple is. Maybe there's unintentional disciples. We just don't know who they are. But we're going to talk to her in just a few minutes. We're also talking with Patrick Sabat. And he, you know what he does? I don't know if you've ever seen this International Pilgrim Virgin Statue of Fatima. Well, since 2003, he's the custodian. And he's going to be talking to us about that and where they're going to be showing up with that beautiful statue of Our Lady of Fatima. And then a little bit later on, we're going to talk to our own director of communications. And Tom Halden's going to join us towards the end of the show here to talk about his experience at the World Meeting of Families. So we've got a great show for you today talking about all things evangelization. But I hope you're doing good. I really do. I hope you're doing well in your life today and that that your relationship with Jesus is deep, meaningful, fruitful. And, you know, sometimes in the fall, you start to see the leaves change. And for some people, that it starts to change their emotions a little bit as they realize that winter is coming. But there's seasons, and there's seasons to life. And one thing I've learned is to embrace everything that comes my way and bring it to Jesus, and He can use all of it. The beautiful thing about walking with the Lord, well, one of the beautiful things is that He makes all things new, and everything is redeemed in our life. Nothing's wasted, and nothing is wasted in your life. You might be, you know, driving around on 610 today or over on 94 in St. Paul and thinking, you know, things are not going my way, but I'll tell you what, God can use every aspect of your life, and I just want to encourage you in that today. You know, one thing I was thinking about over the last few days is the World Meeting of Families with Pope Francis, and isn't he something? I mean, he's different, isn't he? And I've had, and when I say different, I mean he's different, but he's also different than Pope Benedict. And he's different than Pope John Paul II, now St. John Paul II. And I've heard a lot of people talk about that. You know, they'll say, well, he said this, or he didn't say that, or he did this and he didn't do that. And they kind of wonder, you know, how do you interpret this amazing Pope who turned this country upside down with his visit to Washington, New York, and in Philadelphia? I wanted to just make a couple comments there because I think it's interesting. You know, when you study a Pope, when you take a look at Pope Francis, the mistake that some people make is they look at Pope Francis in contrast to Pope Benedict, and in contrast to St. John Paul II. But we're not really called to look at popes in contrast with other popes, but the Catholic way is we look at Pope Francis in continuity. We look at one pope, and then the next pope, and the next pope, and then we stand back and we ask ourselves, what is God doing here? You know, what is God doing with us? And if you really want to understand those three remarkable popes, John Paul II, Benedict, and Francis, you really got to go back to John the 23rd, St. John the 23rd. And if you look at him, he called the Vatican II Council, and he called it not because of doctrinal problems or, you know, trying to take care of disputes and that type of thing, but he called it because the world was changing so much. Remember that back in the 60s? Some of you remember that, and I remember it. You got the communications revolution. You've got the sexual revolution. You've got all these things happening in the 60s, and John the 23rd said, you know what, we need to get together here, and we need to talk about how this church is going to minister in this changing world. How are we going to be relevant in this changing world? And so there was one particular document called Gaudium et Spes. You might not remember that, but just remember this. It's called The Church in the Modern World. You know, that's what it's about. It's the church in the modern world. And it talks about how the sorrows and the needs and so forth of this generation are also the sorrows and the needs of us as Christians. And in that document, they talk about how we relate to the world. Now, here's the neat thing. The architect behind that was Carol Wojtyla, who came to be Pope John Paul II. And that really gave us sort of some guidelines for evangelization and relating to the world. And St. John Paul II laid a great foundation as a philosopher. And then, as the Church teaches, theology is based on good philosophy. So next we have Benedict, who gives us deep, deep theology and a biblical scholar. And then you got Pope Francis, and Pope Francis is different than both of them. And what Pope Francis is doing is, I think he is living out Vatican II. And it's not so much what he says that is grabbing people's attention, even though it is, but I think it's what he does. And if you watch him, I think you're going to see a man who is basically saying, you know, if we're going to relate to the world, as Gaudium et Spes tells us to back in the 1960s, we can't just talk. We can't just debate. It's just not categories of theology that we got to get the world to agree with us on. No, what he is saying is what's needed now is radical mercy, radical love, going out to the poor, going out to the starving. And so you see him get out of that $14,000 rented car and immediately making a beeline to a young boy in a wheelchair. He's saying something to us. He is demonstrating as a father the heart of our Heavenly Father. So I want to encourage you to start watching him carefully, because I think he's giving us lessons, and he is different than Benedict and St. John Paul II. It's not in contrast. I think it's in continuity, and we can learn something from it. Just a thought today about the last three popes that we've had in our church and been so blessed with. Well, coming up on the Rediscover Hour, we're going to talk in just a few minutes with Sherry Waddell. Her book, Forming Intentional Disciples, has really, really had an impact on the church in America. We're also going to be talking today about Our Lady of Fatima specifically. We're going to talk to the custodian of this world-famous Pilgrim Virgin Statue of Fatima, and that's Patrick Sawbot. And then we're going to talk about World Meeting of Families, a little bit of a reflection with our own Director of Communications, Tom Halden. You're listening to the Rediscover Hour, and we'll be back right after this. Rediscover.
Experience, quality, and flexibility are a few of the things we offer to our customers every day.
I'm Tom Ashad with TPM Flooring. TPM Flooring has grown, but our principles remain the same. We offer top selection, a free no-strings-attached consultation, all quality products, and fast installation, usually within a week or two.
The type of flooring products that are available now for your home or office are amazing, and TPM Flooring has them all and can explain how they'll fit your flooring needs. Whether it's for a high traffic area, basement family room, or wood and tile floors that add value and beauty, you'll find them at TPM Flooring. Plus, you'll get a very personalized experience in your home or at their showroom.
We'll help you find the perfect carpet, hardwood, laminate, even cabinets and countertops. Then we professionally install them and vacuum our way out the door. We've worked with several Relevant Radio listeners. If it's time to transform part of your home with new floors, call TPM Flooring at 952-746-5157.
Or tpmflooring.com, 952-746-5157.
Welcome back to the Rediscover Hour. I'm Jeff Cavins, and talking about evangelization, I want to introduce you to a friend of mine that I've had the privilege of working with a few times. And this fall, we're going to be sharing a conference. It's the Fall Formation Day here in the Archdiocese, and that's Sherry Waddell. She's the co-founder of the Catherine of Siena Institute, and they came up with a wonderful charism discernment process that thousands and thousands of Catholics have gone through to try to find their gift. Where do they belong? But I think in recent days, her book, Forming Intentional Disciples, and then the follow-up book, Becoming a Parish of Intentional Disciples, has really acted as a blueprint for many parishes to go to a whole new level. And Sherry Waddell, I want to thank you for joining us today.
Well, good morning, Jeff. It's great to be here.
Yeah, it's good to talk to you, and I am looking forward to working with you this fall. Before we get into the details of Forming Intentional Disciples, you probably didn't see all this happening a few years ago, did you?
No. Nobody's more surprised than I am, I must say. We had been working our work in discernment had sort of pushed us into work in evangelization because we discovered many people, many Catholics, couldn't discern their gifts because they didn't have much of a relationship with God. And so that was about 11 years ago. And in those first 8 years, we got a lot of incomprehension, a lot of pushback, a lot of people, you know, just getting upset and saying, what is this? What are you talking about? So it's, but really, we've seen a dramatic change in the last 3 years. I've seen it all over the country and in other countries. There's just been a change in the conversation, a change in openness. I think we're really grappling. A lot of it started, I think, with the Synod on the New Evangelization, which, you know, kind of was a catalyst. But then, like I say, I just came home last night. So I'm doing yet another clergy day, and the priests were all very eager, very hungry, asking all kinds of great questions. And I've done several of those in the last month. So
that's wonderful. That's fantastic. You know, when we have so many people listening that are maybe they're thinking to themselves, well, I'm Catholic, and I believe everything the Catholic Church teaches. I go to Mass every week. I even flip some pancakes here and there. And what more are you asking for? You're saying an intentional disciple, and I'd like to start off with that. What's the difference between an intentional disciple and an average person in the pew today?
That's a fantastic question. Basically, many of our wonderful, active, faithful Catholics, what we're discovering in talking to tens of thousands of them is that there's many reasons you can be active in the parish. You can go to Mass for many reasons. And many Catholics, even people in leadership, and I get these conversations all the time now, will actually tell, one man came up to me at a major evangelization conference, and he said, until I read your book last month, I did not know it was possible to have a personal relationship with God. Hmm. And this man is in full-time ministry forming clergy. And, you know, and now that I've heard that all over the world, I'm not surprised. But somehow, many of us didn't understand that the faith is first and foremost about a transforming encounter with Christ, who is, of course, we are his body. He is our Lord. He is our Savior. The Mass is all about him and his work on our behalf and the pouring forth of the graces that he won for us. And the idea that I'm supposed to consciously seek to follow him as his disciple in the midst of his church, mm-hmm. that is the heart of intentional discipleship. But for many Catholics, I think for one reason was it felt Protestant, and many people I actually had somebody say to me, I felt like I was betraying my Catholicism to be a disciple, because that was Protestant, and we don't do Protestant things.
Right. Yeah, I've heard that before. You're a convert to the Catholic Church, so you bring some real treasures with you. And like myself, I spent 15 years in Protestant churches and did gain some very valuable things to my Catholic life. When you're talking about intentional discipleship, what, you know, for the average person that's listening, saying, "Well, I am Catholic and I do believe in, but I'm not quite sure what you're talking about being an intentional disciple." What does it mean to be intentional?
It means to be conscious, to be consciously saying to yourself, however early, you know, I mean, this, you can be very at the right, very beginning of this. This is a journey. It's a lifelong journey. But you're saying, Lord, I want to know you. I want to follow you. I want to live my life for you and do what you're calling me to do. And that's the spirit in which you pray, in which you attend Mass, in which you go to confession, in which you read the scriptures. You're now, it's not just a series of, if you will, obligations you're fulfilling, because Catholics sometimes use that language, or duties you're fulfilling, but it is now penetrated to the heart. I am following the Lord. Mm-hmm. In the midst of his church. I'm following Jesus when I go to Mass to encounter him, to be transformed by him, etc., and the whole sacramental life. And that is the heart, really the heart of the matter. And the church actually teaches that for us to receive the benefits of the sacraments, the graces, that the graces would transform us and bear fruit in our lives, we need to have personal faith, conversion, and evangelization has to happen first.
Right. Well, as an adult, though, how does that happen? Because we're so trained in the Catholic Church that in second grade you have First Communion, you're baptized as a baby. People don't remember that, but then their First Communion in second grade, ninth grade, they are confirmed, and now we're speaking to hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of adults saying there needs to be an ongoing conversion. Well, what would that look like? Is there a meeting? Is there another sacrament?
Well, you know what? It happens. It's not now. What's fascinating, actually, the church calls it a revival. Mm-hmm. It isn't just Baptists who have revivals. Catholics do revivals, too. But it's the revival of the graces of all the sacraments you received when you reach that point in your life, and that may happen as an adult, may happen early, it may happen as an adult, where you're saying, Lord, now I am going to give my personal response to all that you have done for me. I love you. I want to grow in that love. I seek to follow you. I want to be your disciple. And they say at that, when you do that, however that happens, and of course it happens for different people in different ways, maybe a retreat, it may be a mystical experience, maybe a book you've read, maybe a conversation or a relationship with a person, maybe something that happens at Mass, and there's that moment when when you say, yes, Lord, and what happens, the church says, is then all those graces are revived in your life, and the power of the Holy Spirit flows through your life. And so this is very much a living, transforming thing. And for some people, it's dramatic. For some people, it's very quiet. You know, it's not about drama.
Right.
It's not about feeling per se. But it is a conscious, intentional, whole person saying, Lord, I'm hungry. I want it all, like Lazoo said. I want it all. I want all that you have for me.
Amen to that. We're talking with Sherry Waddell, the author of Forming Intentional Disciples, and then the second book, Becoming a Parish of Intentional Disciples. Well, Sherry, it leads me to my next question, and that is that if the individual in a parish is saying, I want this, you know, I really want to become an intentional disciple of Jesus. I want to be conscious, or as the Jewish community would say, kavanah, a very focused attention on this day by day, moment by moment, understanding that I'm following the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords, and He loves me. If they want to do that, talk to me a little bit about the structure of our current parishes. I'm not talking about the doctrines of the church or anything like
right.
that, but the way we do, quote-unquote, do church today, is that a hindrance to becoming a personal disciple? Do we need to change our churches?
We have worked at well over 500 parishes now in 137 dioceses, and most of them in the U.S., but elsewhere. And most parishes aren't set up to foster this. So a lot of individual disciples feel pretty lonely because the overall culture of their community, their parish, is not one that nurtures discipleship consciously. Now, that is changing. That's what's so exciting. I spent the last 3 years on the road, talking to hundreds of clergy and thousands of Catholic leaders all over the world. And a lot of people, a lot of parishes are seriously grappling with this and what it takes. But the first thing we've got to do at the parish level is break the silence. There is an unspoken code of silence, especially among lay Catholics, that says you just don't talk about this. That's pretending to be, I don't know what, pretending to be a saint, pretending to be something that you're not. And we need to start talking about the possibility of relationship with God, because many Catholics don't even know that is possible.
Right.
Even if they're faithful and practicing. So relationship with God, talk about Jesus, drop His name. One of my friends says very wittily that it's like Jesus is He who must not be named, that in practice sometimes we treat Him like Voldemort in a Harry Potter film. But we want to talk about Him, what He has done on our behalf, the whole drama of His life, of His, God becoming human and Jesus of Nazareth and His life and His miracles and His teachings and His suffering, His death, His resurrection. That is what we call the kerygma or the gospel, and that is what awakens initial faith, and that's what we all have to wrestle with, because that's what we're saying yes to,
right,
on all that he has done on our behalf. And we need to talk about our own stories, our own encounters. And when that starts to happen at a parish level, when people break that silence, they start talking about all this, and not just the professionals, not just the pastor and the staff and, you know, the people we expect to hear that from, but ordinary Catholics like you and me, you know, mm-hmm. in the pews.
Right.
We start talking about that, and then it suddenly dawns, there's a lot of people who are hungry but literally don't even know it is possible, or don't know that it's legitimately Catholic, or don't know how to get there. They need someone to walk with them in
right.
the process. And the exciting thing is to see those kind of serious conversations now happening at parishes and dioceses all over the country. Bishops are calling their clergy to it. They're writing pastoral letters on the topic. Diocesan and parish staff are grappling with this. Uh-huh. We have over 5,000 people on our Forming Intentional Disciples Facebook forum, and our whole topic is nothing but how do you help people, how do you help Catholics become disciples in the 21st century, especially at the parish level.
Well, that's a great point right there. When you talk about our responsibility, and at the personal level, in a personal relationship with Jesus, if I want to make disciples, you're very aware of Matthew 28, go into all the world and make disciples. Is that for the church, or is that for us individually?
It's for every one of us. I mean, St. John Paul II said every single baptized person bears responsibility for that mission. And he actually said, when it comes to bringing Christ to the world, the role of the laity is more critical than that of the clergy, because the clergy's primary role, of course, is focused on the Christian community itself, on helping us become disciples and be nurtured in our spiritual lives inside the church. But it is our primary, we are the primary apostles to those who are outside, mm-hmm. to the world. And so, yes, every single one of us participates in this mission, has a critical mm-hmm. role in it, is gifted for it as a particular call, and a way that we will contribute and we will be part of this.
One of the questions that I like to ask people is, are you a disciple of Jesus? I like to ask that even more than, are you Catholic? But are you a disciple of Jesus Christ? And they'll say yes. But what's interesting, Sherry, is that oftentimes they answer this way. Are you a disciple of Jesus? Are you Catholic? Yes. I read everything that comes out by this author and that author. I've gone through The Great Adventure. I watch EWTN. I listen to Catholic radio. I am so Catholic. And what they do oftentimes is they answer in terms of what they consume, but that you're going deeper than that in this book, aren't you?
Yes. It's often Catholics mistake activity, mm-hmm. Religious activities or spiritual activities with the relationship. And of course, those activities are wonderful, and they do help nourish our relationship if there is one in place. But sometimes we can do them in the place of the relationship. And that's difficult. That sometimes can happen. And especially those of us who are in ministry, it's easy to do ministry in place of the relationship.
Exactly.
You know,
yeah.
You get so busy. So
you become an enthusiast rather than really a follower.
Yes. And someone who knows, you know, all the church is teaching, you can quote passages from the catechism or uh-huh. scripture. But of course, the relationship is about living this. And of course, all of us struggle to live it. All of us fail. You know, we all have our conflicts and our, you know, but it's the attempt to walk with him, to bring this into life, to not just know what the church teaches, but to say, okay, what does that mean for me and my family now, today, in Minneapolis or Colorado Springs or wherever you are? How do I live this in this moment?
Well, you're coming to the Twin Cities, and you have quite a schedule, and I'm going to give that schedule here in a moment. What I would suggest, Sherry, is that you move here after this schedule, and we've got some room for you because you're going to have a busy schedule. I'm going to be joining you on November 5th for the Fall Formation Day. You're giving several talks, and I'm going to give one talk on what does a modern day disciple look like. So that's the Fall Formation Day on November 5th. That's for DREs, priests, and so forth. But we have three other opportunities on November 4th at Our Lady of Grace in Edina, November 5th, Guardian Angels in Oakdale, and November 7th at St. Hubert's in Chanhassen. That's my own hometown parish that I grew up in. What can people expect at the seminar?
Well, basically, they'll all be variations on a theme, depending on what, you know, but it's on, we're going to introduce you to sort of the journey that typical 21st century people make on their way to discipleship and how to, you know, recognize that. Where are you in your own journey? How to talk to people, how to listen to their stories and hear, you know, where God has been at work in their lives. We're going to talk about parishes and how parishes who are really grappling with this, what mm-hmm. they do in the early stages. We'll talk some about charisms. We'll talk about the generation of saints. In other words, we're not the first Catholics to deal with the crisis. Mm-hmm. And people who face much deeper crisis have to come together to follow Christ as disciples together and seen enormous revivals in their time that changed the course of their whole nation. I'll also be at St. Joseph on Friday, November 6th. I'm doing a Forming Intentional Parish evening there. So, yeah, it basically all of these in different forms we'll be talking about. And
that's great.
Very exciting stuff. This is living stuff. This is the cutting, in many ways, the cutting edge of evangelization in the Catholic world. That's really about how you do it now.
Right.
Because the culture has changed so much. It doesn't work to do what we used to do. And as I often say, God has no grandchildren in the 21st century. We can't presume that inherited faith will survive. You're either an intentional Catholic, an intentional disciple, or you're pretty much nothing these days.
Well, that's truth. That's a good place to leave it. And we're looking forward to you coming to the Twin Cities. Once again, you're going to be at OLG, Our Lady of Grace, November 4th, Guardian Angels in Oakdale, November 5th. I'll be joining you for the Fall Formation Day on the 5th also. And on the 6th, St. Joseph's, and November 7th, St. Hubert's in Chanhassen. Well, Sherry, if people want to stay in touch with you and what you're doing in your work, where's the best place to connect on the web?
The web, you just go to www.siena.org. That is the website of the Catherine of Siena Institute. You can see our calendar because I'm not the only one traveling. We've got a lot of other people out there doing events all over the country. And you can see what is coming. We've got a bookstore, everything online. So
fantastic.
Make a visit.
Thanks for joining us, Sherry. Look forward to seeing you.
All right, great. Look forward to it, Jeff. Bye.
Sherry Waddell, she's the author of Forming Intentional Disciples. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about that beautiful statue, Our Lady of Fatima. That's coming up next with Patrick Sawbot. You're listening to the Rediscover Hour.
Rediscover. He did the dishes, rubbed my feet, surprised me with tulips, took me to musicals, even though he didn't like them. Carried my bags while I did the shopping. Held my hand. He died of cancer 4 years ago. And because he loved me, I can stay in our home. I can be here for our children. I can afford to pay for their college education. I can worry about the other things in life besides money. He still loves me. And still shows it.
Life insurance is about love. Show your love this month. Catholic United Financial. Life insurance, retirement products, IRAs.
Catholic.
Who we are.
United.
What we are.
Financial.
What we do.
Catholic United Financial. On the web at CatholicUnitedFinancial.org. In the South Minneapolis, Richfield, and Bloomington area, contact Ryan Selleck.
You are an ocean.
Welcome back to the Rediscover Hour. Beautiful, beautiful day to be serving Jesus as intentional disciples. If you just joined us, you just missed a good interview. But I can tell you what, you can go online and listen to the whole show, archspm.org, do a search. And Relevant Radio has done such a good job working with the Archdiocese of St. Paul and Minneapolis. True partnership. It's been a lot of fun. But we just got done with the discussion. I kind of teased you there. We just had a great discussion with Sherry Waddell, who wrote the book Forming Intentional Disciples. And that book has shown up in quite a few places. Well, shifting gears, we're going to go all the way to Portugal now. And we're going to talk about Fatima and this beautiful pilgrim statue. And the custodian of that statue is Patrick Sabat. And he's going to be talking to us about the importance of it and where that statue is showing up these days. Patrick, welcome to the Rediscover Hour.
Thank you, Jeff. Good morning. And thank you for having me in your program.
It's a pleasure. You know, a lot of people, the Catholic Church, Patrick, is so big, and there's so many devotions and so many even types of rosaries and everything else. Tell our audience a little bit about Fatima to begin with, so we have some context to understand about you being the custodian of this amazing statue.
Right. Well, the statue of Our Lady of Fatima, of course, is an original from Fatima itself in Portugal. Mm-hmm. Now, Our Lady appeared there with a simple message. It's a request, not only for those shepherd children that she appeared to. She talked to them, Francisco, Jacinta, and Lucia. And they're young children. They're uneducated. They're illiterate. And she spoke about prayer, penance, conversion, especially praying of the rosary every day. And mm-hmm. It was in 1917 when she appeared to them, to bring you the historical context of this apparition. It's an approved apparition, you know. The bishop and even the Vatican has affirmed that it is a supernatural origin. So they didn't just simply made it up. So Our Lady appeared in request to pray for the conversion of sinners in reparation for the sins of the world. Uh-huh. And if we do this, there will be peace. That is the reason why we call the message of Our Lady of Fatima the peace plan from heaven, because she laid it all out during the First World War. And the statue was commissioned to be the Pilgrim Virgin statue shortly after the Second World War, because the church realized, hey, listen, if we don't heed to the request of the Blessed Mother, war, famine, persecutions of the church, and we're seeing it happening. Mm-hmm. And John Paul II says it's still relevant today in our time than it was in 1917. So we still continue to bring Our Lady's message
right
through the statue. We would like to attract the people to this beautiful message of Fatima.
So what you do then is you take the statue. How big is the statue, by the way?
It's about 3.5 feet tall.
3.5 feet tall. You take that around the world. Who put you in charge of that? I'm not meaning to be funny, but who put you in charge of that statue? How did you become the custodian?
It's a long story, but I'm going to make it really, really simple and short. It's the World Apostolate of Fatima. It's a pontifical association of the lay faithful. And so it's an organization. It's a movement of lay people mm-hmm. around the world. And they're handling the message of Fatima and the statue tours. And I got involved in 2003 when she visited the Philippines. The statue came to my hometown. And I was in the university. I was teaching philosophy, and she came in with a big bang, you know, all the parades and everything. And I looked out the window, and there she is. She's being processed. And the priest friend, he called me and says, "Hey, would you like to see our beautiful statue from Portugal?" Mm-hmm. Of course. And so I went and I looked, and I was impressed. And at the time, they needed another person to travel with Our Lady.
So that's how you got in and you became the custodian. What does your schedule look like now? Where are you going with it?
Well, I just arrived yesterday morning from Brazil. Uh-huh. And before that, I was in Colombia, in South America, too. And before that, I was in British Columbia, that's in Canada. And I've been in the States, traveling in San Antonio, Texas, in Hawaii, back in the Philippines this year, Guam, Taipan, so probably about 8 countries and territories just this year.
Are you going to be coming to the Midwest in the United States?
My van is ready for me. I'm going to drive up to Minneapolis. I think it's in Minnesota, St. Peter's,
yep.
for tomorrow's conference. Glad you asked me that question.
So you're going to be at St. Peter's in Mendota Heights, and that's tomorrow, right?
That's right.
That's the 10th. That's Saturday the 10th. If people would like to take advantage of that opportunity, and when they come, they're not only do they have an opportunity to venerate this amazing chapel. Let me say one thing about that. We're not talking about worshiping a statue, which sometimes people think Catholics do, but venerating, that's giving, you know, great honor to Our Lady of Fatima and the message of Fatima, which has been very, very, very powerful. Are you going to be giving a talk also?
I will be giving a talk on the message of Our Lady and, you know, some stories and inspirational stories from the experience of people from all over the world who venerated Our Lady. And it's a good thing you clarify that. We do not worship Mary, but we imitate the virtues of Mary to become perfect disciples of Christ.
Very good. Well, it's a pleasure to talk to you, and we wanted to let our listeners know that you're going to be at St. Peter's at in Mendota Heights, Saturday the 10th. Do you know the time on that? I don't have that.
Let me
look here. I might.
Yeah, probably 7:30 Mass until 3, and statue will be there all day, and it'll be open for veneration. And, you know, I invite people to come and experience the presence of Mary.
Yep.
This beautiful image that's been venerated by millions of people all over the world.
I just found it in my notes there, Patrick. It's going to be 8 a.m. Mass, Fatima Prayers and Devotions, the music by Justin Stroh. He's down in Faribault, and his family is going to be joining him. The program goes until 1:30 p.m., and then public veneration of the statue until 3 p.m. So there you go. We got it. It's 8 a.m., starting with Mass, and it goes all the way till 3 in the afternoon. There's going to be you talking. There's going to be music by Justin Stroh and family. Public veneration of the statue until 3 p.m. Patrick, good to talk to you.
Well, nice talking to you. And probably I hope to see everybody there in Mendota.
I hope everybody can get in that church. That'll be great. Thanks. That's Patrick Sabat, and he is the custodian of the world-famous Pilgrim Virgin Statue of Fatima since 2003, and he'll be at St. Peter's in Mendota Heights on tomorrow. That's tomorrow. That's the 10th of October. If you're listening on Sunday, it was yesterday, but I hope you can take advantage of that. We're going to take a break. When we come back, hey, we're going to talk to our own Director of Communications, Tom Halden, who was out at the World Meeting of Families. And we're going to get a little insight as to, you know, from his family perspective, what that was like, and did anything special really happen? He's going to share some things with you. You're listening to the Rediscover Hour. God bless you. We'll be back in just a minute. Rediscover.
Gianna Homes in the Twin Cities has transformed the traditional memory care residence into a more positive life experience and is celebrating 16 years. A very special gala is planned for Friday, November 6th.
I'm Anne Marie Hansen. I hope you'll join us for our Gianna Homes Gala, a toe-tapping, fun-filled event with the big band sound of the Sevilles and the culinary delights of D'Amico Catering, hosted by Carrie Levin's Corey Heppola. It will be a very special evening honoring our residents, and we'll support the Resident Care Fund with a silent and live auction. I hope you'll join us on November 6th at the Metropolitan Club in Golden Valley.
To reserve your place, call 952-988-0953. Gianna Homes lovingly cares for the mind, body, and spirit of their dementia and Alzheimer's patients. You can find out more at relevantradio.com, keyword caring.
Welcome back. His grace is enough. That is for sure. Hey, I hope you're having a really, really good day. And if today is a challenge for you, I want to encourage you. You might want to take just a few minutes on the way to work, On the way home tonight, stop by a local Catholic parish that has an adoration chapel where the Lord is, and just spend a few minutes with Him. In the midst of a crazy schedule and a crazy world, you know, maybe the evening news isn't the best prescription for you today. Maybe you just substitute it with a few minutes before the Son of God. It can change your day. It really can. And if something just kind of said to you right then, you know what, I need to do that, that might be the Lord talking to you. He might be. So take advantage of it. Joining us right now is Tom Halden. He is the Director of Communications for the Archdiocese of St. Paul and Minneapolis. He has quite a media background. Many of you are familiar with him from local television, and he's doing just a bang-up job and a great job and has become a friend. And Tom, I want to welcome you to the Rediscover Hour.
Well, good morning. Thanks, Jeff.
Technically, you'd be my boss during this show. Because you're the Director of Communications.
Yeah, that's not going to happen.
How am I doing?
Fabulously. Always.
Well, welcome. You know, Director of Communications, I want to start with that before we get over to the World Meeting of Families. Mm-hmm. What does a Director of Communications do?
I just coordinate the internal and external communications of the Archdiocese. So employees and parishes and clergy. I coordinate what message that we need to get out, information to all the parishes when something comes down from the Archbishop or from one of the offices of the Archdiocese, and then externally, so media relations.
Someone driving over on Crosstown right now saying, man, that name is familiar. What, how would they have known you in the past
year? Well, I worked at Fox 9, okay. Mostly on the morning show for 12 years until April, and God said, you're done doing this. And I said, okay.
Well, it's great to have you on the team, and you're a lot of fun to work with.
Oh, thank you.
And you really get involved with your job because you actually went out to out east for a World Meeting of Families with everybody.
Well, that was one of those trips where when it was announced, when the Vatican announced it, remember that morning when it just the whole world, just of course our world here in the United States, just erupted, and the Pope said he'd be coming to Philadelphia. And my wife and I were talking, we said, we got to go. So this was long before. Mm-hmm. My change of career.
Oh, was it? Okay.
Yeah. So we got right away, we got online, grabbed a couple of the few hotel rooms that were left just north of Philly, and we said, we're going to go. And that's all we had done. So we went out there.
How many children do you have?
We have four kids. Okay. Matthew's almost 15, Caroline's 12, Andrew's 9, and Greta's 7.
Assuming it was a van then.
It was one van. And then, so if it wasn't just enough for the six of us to go, my mother-in-law is Catholic up in Two Harbors. My wife's from Two Harbors. And she asked if she could go. And we said, well, of course. And then my mom and dad also, and they live in North St. Paul, members at St. Peter's Parish, and they wanted to go too. We said, well, of course, we'll just go. So we took two vehicles with nine of us, and it's 2,500 miles round trip.
It's a caravan.
It was a caravan. And it was a pilgrimage. It was great.
And you didn't lose Jesus in the caravan anywhere.
We did not. Well, you know, yes, we did not lose Jesus. We didn't lose anybody else either.
Oh, that's great. Well, you know, the big question everybody has when they find out that you went out to out east to see the Pope is, did you see the Pope?
We did. And we were part of the World Meeting of Families. We had no tickets to anything. So we just went out there truly as people
pilgrims.
Searching out the Pope. And other than those two hotel rooms, no tickets to anything. We didn't really know much about how we were going to get around. We just knew everything was going to be closed. And we'd kind of stressed out about it. And we said, you know, God, you're going to help us. You're going to get us downtown where we need to go. The people were unbelievable. And to answer your question, we got within about 10 or 15 feet.
Did you? When he drove by?
When he drove by on Saturday night, uh-huh. Right before the concert, he did a loop. Now, granted, it was a little fast, but it was fantastic.
It is.
It was just, I don't get starstruck very much, and I don't know if that's just because of the years of meeting people, and you know, I've been starstruck before, but there was a feeling when you knew he was coming, not even when he could see him, but when you knew that the Pope Mobile was coming.
Yeah, yeah.
There was an electricity, and it was the most joyous moment, one of the most joy-filled moments of my life. And I looked around, and the other people were feeling the exact same thing, and the screaming and yelling. It was just,
Papa.
It was deafening, yeah. And we had, you know, a lot of Spanish-speaking people, and even the English-speaking people started yelling, Papa.
It is really, it's electric. I remember in television covering Pope John Paul II, one time in St. Louis at the Kiel Center, when he came in, Mark McGuire, the famous hitter, you know, for the St. Louis Cardinals, he bowed down and kissed the Pope's ring, and then the Pope came into the Kiel Center, and it was so electric and loud and flashes that the two guys that were working on my camera and sound weren't even religious, and they fell to their knees and started crying. And there's something about when a Pope comes.
I wouldn't doubt that.
There's something about when the Pope comes by, and you're right. He might have gone by, and it might have been 8 seconds or whatever.
Probably, yeah.
But it's like a slice out of time that is different than all the rest of your schedule or your experiences.
Surreal. You said electric was a great way, but also surreal. And then he goes by, and you're trying to process the moment as it's happening, and there's so much happening, and there's so much craziness. And then he goes by, and people just started looking at each other, which was really neat. And the joy on people's faces and the smiles, and people were hugging each other. And what it was really impressive, it was dark by the time he came through. So at 7:30, there were so many kids.
Yeah.
There were just so many, like even little two-year-olds and little babies. Just people just brought their families to get a glimpse of them.
And you have to make the decision, do I take pictures or video, or do I just look at them, you know?
Well, and then when it happens, you know, the people crushed, you know, they just rush in and bump up against each other against these barricades. And I had Andrew, who's 9, on my shoulders, because I really thought this is just such an important time.
Right.
And we were back a little ways, and so I put him on my shoulders, and he said he would take the video with my phone. I said, be sure, though, to see the Pope with your own eyes. I said, don't look at the monitor. Don't look at the screen of the phone.
Right.
Just kind of follow him with that, but be sure to see him with your own eyes. And when the Pope went past, he started yelling, I got it. I nailed it. I saw him. And it was just amazing.
It reminds me of the story in the Bible of Zacchaeus up in the tree in Jericho, and he got up there just to see Jesus go by. It must have been very, you know.
But the Pope didn't tell us he was coming to our house.
Yeah, that's the part you missed out. What would you say the impact was on your family?
I think it was first of all, just an opportunity for the six of us to be together. Everybody knows. I mean, everyone's so busy, and having kids from second grade all the way up to ninth grade, there's a lot of different activities. So on that front, we were all together for 5 days. Mm-hmm. Now we were together. There was a lot of togetherness in the car. But I think they saw that the church is so big, and it's so diverse.
You're not alone.
That's what we looked. And when we saw my wife and I kept on saying, look at all these people. Look at how many different kinds of faces and ages. And, you know, it was the very, very old to tiny babies. People brought their newborns.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a big deal. You had to go through security. So people had to go through a lot to get there. But as you say, especially for our teenagers, you're not alone.
Yeah.
You know, you might feel alone in school. You might feel alone that, you know, a lot of your friends aren't practicing the faith or their parents aren't. But you are certainly part of such a universal, a worldwide church.
It made the news, and you reported on it, that Mary Jo Copeland got a what we'd call a private meeting with the Pope. And all of our listeners are wondering why they didn't get that invitation. But she got that invitation, and Bishop Cousins went with her. What can you tell us about that? I know a lot of people want to know what was that like. And I know that you have talked to a bishop, and you got kind of a perspective there.
Yeah, they were in a room at the nunciature, so the Vatican embassy, basically, to the U.S. And Bishop Cousins said there were about a dozen or two dozen people just kind of waiting and milling about. And then all of a sudden the Pope comes in, and he greeted each person individually and spent some time. I was going through pictures yesterday on the Vatican website to order for folks here, and there must be 50 pictures of the Pope and Mary Jo Copeland.
Is it really?
Yeah, and she must have hugged him 2 or 3 times, which is a very Mary Jo, but the joy on her face. She was in tears, yet she was smiling, and she was embracing him, and they're talking with each other, and then she gave him a copy of her book.
Uh-huh.
Which I think was kind of, even have a picture of that. But the moment that the bishop talks about, it was just so peaceful, and the Pope is present. When he's talking to you, he's talking only to you.
Mm-hmm.
He's not waiting to move on to the next person.
Right. Yeah. And he's got that that presence about him that he's with you, and you are the only thing in the world right now. I think that's one of the common denominators of great world leaders, but certainly saints, John Paul II. Father Benedict Groeschel told me one time that that's exactly the way Mother Teresa was, is that she would hold your hands, look you in the eye, and you didn't think there was anyone else in the world but you and Mother Teresa.
And that's a gift.
And that's one I didn't get. But I would have loved to have met Mother Teresa at some point. Talk to us a little bit about what's going on in the Archdiocese right now with this new evangelization, Archbishop Hebda. Things seem to be turning up, and it's very exciting.
Well, it is very exciting. We just had 4 listening sessions this week on Monday and Tuesday, and a combination of daytime and evening sessions. And between the 4, over 1,000 people have come out.
1,000?
And it's truly a listening session. It's not a chance for Archbishop to talk about what he's doing.
Uh-huh.
It's a chance for him to listen to what is happening here. What are the concerns? What are the issues here in the Archdiocese of St. Paul and Minneapolis that the nuncio, the ambassador to the U.S. from the Vatican, needs to know and pass that information on to the Congregation for Bishops,
mm-hmm.
and then ultimately on to Pope Francis. So it's true input that is being sent to the Holy See.
That is a beautiful thing. Archbishop Hebda is such a warm mm-hmm. father. We've had the chance to work with him in several meetings, and I got to tell you, he is really a joy to work with, and he really does listen to people, doesn't he?
He does, and he said that's what the Pope told him when they had met, I believe, the first time. The Pope told him, he said, listen, 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 talk, talk, talk.
Listen, 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 talk, talk,
so he's stressing the listening first. And so again, the Archbishop doesn't make any speeches during this. He addresses the people who attend the sessions and talks about the process.
Uh-huh.
But then it's truly listening to what are our greatest strengths in the Archdiocese, what are our greatest challenges, and then what characteristics or attributes does the next Archbishop need to have. Again, this goes to Rome ultimately, but it's all the information is also going to stay here for that next Archbishop.
That's beautiful.
So when he is brought here and installed, he can see right when he gets here, these are the things that people are concerned about.
Tom, we have a couple minutes left. You are the Director of Communications in the Archdiocese here. And what are the major tools that you are using to communicate the message to the people? Because I think, you know, all of us want to know what's happening. Mm-hmm. We've gone through some tough times. We want to know what's happening. We want to know the moves that are being made. What are your basic tools that we should look out for?
Well, one of the things that we're trying to do, and really forwardly, is to work with Relevant Radio. Probably mm-hmm. one of the best tools. Archbishop Hebda was on Drew Mariani's show. I believe that was Monday afternoon. We're also trying to work with the secular media. You know, I really see this as the communications as a ministry. Mm-hmm. And we're ministering to the members of the media who will then be ministering also to the people who are watching or reading or listening. So using the existing means of communications, we also convinced Archbishop Hebda and Bishop Cousins to sign up for Twitter. Mm-hmm. They are fantastic tweeters. So at Archbishop Hebda and at Bishop Cousins, if you want to follow them, they do all their own tweets. And they're really, really good.
And, of course, you've got the great Catholic spirit.
Absolutely. How could I forget that?
And your web. Web. You got a lot of
archspm.org.
Very good. Well, it's good to work with you.
Oh, I love being across the hall from you, Jeff. Even though you stole the office that used to be the Director of Communications.
Used to be the bishop.
There's no grudge, but, you know, just saying.
You can have it.
No.
You can have it. But it is good to work with you. And we've got to have you on the show periodically to give us an update. You are the master of communication.
Well, I don't know about that. We're trying. We're doing our best. Try every day to do better than the day before.
Tom Halden, he's the Director of Communications for the Archdiocese of St. Paul in Minneapolis. And there is a lot going on and a lot to communicate. And Paul, there's a lot going on in the next week or two.
Always. Curatio Apostolate for Healthcare Professionals, along with the University of St. Thomas Center for Catholic Studies, presents noted speaker Christian Brueger, Wednesday, October 21st, University of St. Thomas St. Paul Campus. Title of Professor Brueger's talk will be Catholic Perspective on Dying, Renewing End-of-Life Care and Obligations of a Holy Death. Evening begins with Mass at the Center for Catholic Studies Chapel, then reception, dinner, and talk to follow at McNeely Hall. For more information, visit CuratioApostolate.com. That's CuratioApostolate.com.
Marianne Koharski of Pro-Life Across America will be featured at St. Joseph Catholic Church in Rosemount, Monday, October 19th, 7 p.m. for a talk on Raising Christian Children in a Secular World. All are welcome. St. Joseph Church is located at 13900 Biscayne Avenue in Rosemount.
St. Albert's in Albertville will host their Fall Festival this Sunday, October 11th, 11 to 4. Activities include kids' games, country store, raffle, bingo, and a wall of wine. Go to the church website for more details, churchofstalbert.org.
All engaged and newly married couples, you're invited to join the couples' half-day retreat at St. Mark's in St. Paul on Saturday, October 17th. This is an opportunity for young couples to prepare for and strengthen their marriages by putting Christ at the center. The retreat is from 8:45 until 11:45 a.m., and it includes a light breakfast, time for reflection, and small group discussions.
Fellowship of Catholic Scholars. The Fellowship of Catholic Scholars will hold their 38th convention at the St. Paul Hotel, October 23rd through the 25th. This will mark the 25th anniversary of Ex Corde Ecclesiae. This convention will consider the new evangelization in relation to colleges and universities. The event is open to the public, students, local clergy, and religious. For more information, go to the Fellowship of Catholic Scholars at www.catholicscholars.org.
Holy Family Academy in St. Louis Park is having an early childhood education symposium on Thursday, October 29th. It's going to be at 6:30 p.m. in the Cotter Hall. That's the lower floor of the school. Come hear our pre-K through second grade teachers discuss their childhood education philosophy and curriculum, and come with your own questions about early childhood education. RSVP at hfamn.org.
Catholic Parents Online invites you to the 17th annual CPO Luncheon and Silent Auction Fundraiser. Father Robert Altier will present on combating anti-Christian bigotry, defending religious freedom in an intolerant age. The event runs from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Saturday, October 24th at Southview Country Club in West St. Paul. For more information, call 651-705-5409. That's 651-705-5409, or email info@catholicparents.org. Big show today.
It was a big show, and we got a big show next time.
You too.
We do. Tune in next Rediscover Hour as we talk with newly ordained Father Vaughn Traco. Father Traco is married, a grandfather of two, and you're probably thinking, I've got to tune in now. He's married. Yes, he was one under the pastoral provision.
And this is the second married priest in the Archdiocese,
isn't it? Yep. He's a grandfather of two and a former Anglican priest. He was ordained to the priesthood on May 3rd, 2015, and is the new chaplain at Providence Academy. Join us during this hour, to hear Father Traco and how he was drawn to the beauty of the Catholic Church. As we draw to a close on another Rediscover Hour, I want to encourage you. Galatians 2:20, I've been crucified with Christ. It's no longer I who live, but Christ who lives in me. In the life which I now live in the flesh, I live by faith in the Son of God, who loved me and delivered himself up for me. Remember, it's Christ's life in you that your friends, family, and neighbors need to hear. God bless you. We'll see you next time.
The Rediscover Hour is heard every Friday morning at 9, Saturday evening at 6, and Sunday morning at 9 on Relevant Radio 1330. You can find show audio archives at rediscover-faith.org and at relevantradio.com. Keyword, Rediscover. The Rediscover Hour is a production of the Archdiocese of St. Paul in Minneapolis in cooperation with Relevant Radio. Rediscover.